getting a divorce, even thinking about getting a divorce, can be overwhelming, scary, and sometimes exciting. Join divorce coach and mediator Mandy Walker for conversations about divorce. The more you know, the easier it will be to make your divorce healthier, less stressful, and to put it behind you. Here's Mandy.
Welcome to Conversations About Divorce. I'm Mandy Walker, and today we're talking about child support, which is often one of the most contentious and bitter areas of divorce negotiations. And those disagreements can and do continue for years after the divorce is final. We often hear complaints of child support going unpaid and unenforced, leaving the custodial parents struggling to provide for their child. At the other end of the spectrum, we hear complaints and fears about the consequences for non-payment, such as garnishment of wages, loss of driver's licenses and professional licenses, and imprisonment. Just recently, following the shooting death of Walter Scott in South Carolina, his family argued that he ran from the police following a traffic stop because he was afraid he was going to get arrested for non-payment of child support, something that had happened to him some 10 times before. Joining me today is Kimberly Sears Allers, who is an award-winning journalist and author of the Mocha Manual book series published by HarperCollins. Her article, "Forgiving $38,750 in Child Support for My Kids' Sake," was recently published by the Motherload blog at the New York Times, and last I checked, it had received over 450 comments. Welcome, Kimberly.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Your article obviously hit a nerve. But before we talk about the comments, for our listeners who haven't read it, could you please share how your ex came to be so much in arrears and why you asked the court to forgive that debt?
Sure. So also, I always want people to understand that, you know, no one's full story can be told in 800 words. You know, so much of it was limited by the space constraints of writing for a blog that has a word count limit. So basically, you know, my ex-husband is British, and we were living in London. We had moved to America, and, you know, he had some tough transitions, just reestablishing himself and his career and things like that. It was very easy for me to go back to work, not as much for him, you know, dealing with cultural differences, et cetera. And then during that part, we actually separated and then divorced, and he was still in America, but still having some of the same struggles, certainly ups and downs, and nothing that was extremely consistent. So it was really during those times of either underemployment or, you know, brief periods of unemployment where he began to accrue in arrears.
Right. Did that make it difficult for you financially when he was not able to make his child support payments?
Absolutely. It was very difficult for me. And, you know, I had to do additional things for myself to work and to provide. And, it was certainly a tough time. You know, I think most women going through divorce, you know, as you're kind of, even if you're dealing with, you know, two incomes, but one that may be inconsistent, you know that something's coming at some point. And, you know, sometimes the highs and the lows, but when it's just you, it certainly is a lot. So it was a very difficult time, a very difficult time.
Right. I'm sorry. Continue with your story. So
okay. So, you know, the arrears began to accrue, and then, you know, he made the, you know, relatively sudden decision to move back home to London. And, you know, I think at that time he felt that if he went back, he could provide better financially, although obviously there's a huge loss of, you know, my children not seeing their father every weekend as they were accustomed to doing. You know, he lived about 10 minutes away, so we were able to, you know, work together as best at our ability to be supportive and things like that. But when he really felt this pressure around the finances, he felt that perhaps it was better for him to go back to London. At least he felt he could send more money. And then unfortunately when he went back, he was kind of in the same struggle. And then he would pay me directly, but he had set himself up in the system, and that's the part that, you know, you have to kind of say, hey, my position has changed, my circumstances has changed. And I think because he was always hopeful that it was that nothing would change, that he would be able to do it, he'd be able to do it, something would come through, that he never really went back to the courts to say, I can't do this.
So you really think that, like, you're, it sounds like your ex is actively involved in with his children, and that you have a good relationship with him. Am I reading more into what you said?
You know, I would say workable. I don't know if good is the word that I use.
Okay, I usually use the word.
We certainly have tried to have a workable relationship, but yes, you know, he takes his involvement very seriously, and you know, those were some things that we were very clear about. The children spending time with him, you know, even when times they didn't want to necessarily go, he was like, "Nope, it's my time. You're gonna come to dad, and if you're coming to dad kicking and screaming, then you come to dad kicking and screaming. I'll deal with it." You know, so he was very much very active and having his time with his children.
Okay, great. And then, and it sounds like he was. I like to try and work from a place of giving people the benefit of the doubt, and the people work from their best intentions. It sounds like, you know, he could have gone back to the court to get modification, but maybe it was difficult from England, but he was always optimistic and felt that he did have a financial responsibility to his children.
Right. I think that is correct. And I also think, you know, you don't really understand the system here. And I don't, you know, it wasn't my job to explain it to him. But, you know, as I was trying to at least let him know what he could do, I think also was he didn't fully understand the U.S. system until much later. And then it had gotten, you know, to a point of where punitive actions were looking to be enforced. And, you know, there was nothing that I could do, really. There wasn't much that I could do at that point.
So, what were some of those punitive actions that they were looking to take?
Well, you know, driver's license. I mean, certainly there are steps before arrest. I think there was a letter about, you know, his driver's license, which, you know, to me, he needed, even when he was here, he needed a license to work. I mean, we live in a suburban area where you cannot survive without a car. And so I didn't want to see his license taken away, because then he really won't be able to work to provide for the children. So that didn't seem to make sense to me. So, you know, it was just lots of, you know, kind of hurdles, and, you know, but a lot of fear, a lot of kind of scaring and threatening tactics, and not much help and support.
Okay.
So ultimately, I mean, this has been going on, and, you know, I quite honestly figured it wasn't any of my concern. You know, you need to go and tell them that you're living in another country. You need to go and tell them this. I had written a letter because he had made some payments to me directly. So whenever he did, I would report that so they could deduct that from what his arrears was. So I felt that I was doing my part in letting them know that he was making payments to me directly, but he needed to do something, which he claims he had difficulty trying to do from abroad. So, the issue just really came to a head with my daughter's graduation. As I shared in the piece, it meant everything to her for her father to be there. And, you know, when we were talking about the possibility of him coming over and things like that, it became a real concern about these, you know, fear of arrest warrants and all these other things and what could happen to him, because I believe at that point, like, the passport issue was something that had been threatened, although I don't think they could have enforced it because he doesn't have a U.S. passport, but there was all these threats and fears and things out there.
So
and,
possibly even if he had come for your daughter's graduation, he could have been arrested at immigration coming into the country.
Exactly. That was the concern. Mm.
And so, how long had this been going on for? Was it like 2 years or 3 years or?
You know, it was more than that. Probably about four.
Okay.
I would say three, almost four.
Okay.
So that's when, you know, I really realized that one very important distinction that I try to make in the piece is between the unwilling and the unable, you know, and that unfortunately our system throws them both in the same kind of prison down barrel, as I said in the piece. But, you know, I felt strongly that when he could, he did give, and, you know, and it may not be the right amount. So the other part, sorry, I didn't mention, of the arrears was underpayment. So whatever, you know, if our monthly payment was supposed to be $600 and he gave me $200, he's still accumulating arrears, although he did try to pay me something. So between those two things, underpayment and then that's really how the arrears accumulated. So, you know, my daughter's graduation was coming, and it was everything to her for her father to be there, and I just did not want this issue to be in the way. And, you know, over the time, I just become emotionally tired of seeing the letters from child support enforcement, excuse me, lawyers who now, you know, solicit you know, get the money owed to you. I just didn't want that to be an environment, and I don't want my children to have arrest warrant in their vocabulary about their father. That's very, very important to me, because I think, you know, what children think of their fathers matters. And so, you know, what could I do? Do I think that he'll ever pay me the money? Probably not. And so my goal is to try to remove any obstacles for my children to be with their father, to have him present. And if I could do that, then that's what I was going to do. But I also made it clear in the article, I felt it was money I would never see.
Okay. All right. So you really felt like trying to hold him accountable for those arrears was a lost cause and was more damaging to your children.
Absolutely. At that point, it was more damaging to my children. And, you know, for what they want. You know, they would love for their father to be able to come over, you know, and see their school and, you know, meet their friends, and that just has not been possible because of these threats and because of these things. And, you know, it really hurt my children, you know. So it was just something that, to me, it was worth the money to walk away from it. And I also felt strongly that as women, I have a lot of single mother friends, we have an emotional attachment to child support and to money that we're quote unquote owed. And I really just wanted to let it all go. Obviously, when you're going through divorce, there are lots of things that you may never get, right? Maybe closure, maybe answers. And I just threw this right into the same bag.
Wow.
So,
right.
And said, hey, you know, I don't really want, you know, it was just one other thing that was still kind of looming. And I just didn't like the energy about it at all. So, and I don't want anyone to think that I am so well off I could do without $38,000. That is not the case.
Right.
I have been able to make do without it. And, of course, anyone could look for new money. That could go to their college education, you know, if anything. So it wasn't about that. It wasn't really me understanding that what my children really needed right now in this phase in their life is the ability for their father to show up. And this was standing in the way of his ability to show up.
So what I'm hearing there is that this is also partly I do some work on forgiveness as well, but it's like as long as you can get worked up over child support, then your ex is still holding control over you. So for you,
exactly. You
being able to forgive the arrears means getting to forgiveness and being free of his influence and being able to focus on your life going forward without
Absolutely. Getting
angry and worked up and bitterness about this money that was owed.
Right, because every time you're moving forward, then a letter comes and you know, you're kind of taken back to the anger and, you know, whatever resentment you may have. And it's just, I didn't want any more of that, you know. I just did not want any more of that. And for me to have a clean break and to have my peace of mind and to feel like I've done everything possible to make sure that my children can have their father as present as he can possibly be given the geographic limitations,
right,
then that's my peace and that's my joy. And really that's my payoff. And I'm good with that.
So, Kimberly, when you, to actually forgive his debt, you had to go to court.
I did. And
tell us about that.
Oh, my goodness. It was. I didn't even get to share the backstory because, you know, my divorce had occurred in one place. So I went back and forth there, was getting the runaround into the district where my enforcement act was initiated, only to have it transferred to where I was currently living. So there was, this really took me months of long drives back out to where I used to live, You know, you go to child support, they say go to the court. You go to court, they say go to child support enforcement. And, you know, it was just ridiculous.
So it wasn't an easy thing for you to do.
It wasn't an easy thing for me to do. and sitting for the 3 hours was the easiest part, actually, because there was a whole lot of, like I said, back and forth, run around that kind of preceded my ability to get it, you know, transferred to the jurisdiction where I was currently living and for them to deal with it. But, you know, I also want to share with people, and I share this amongst my Facebook friends, that I know people have been saying, you know, some people have been saying, great job. But, you know, it's a pride-swallowing experience. I don't know for anybody else, but certainly for me to kind of be in and out of court, and, you know, that's just not the life that I saw for myself or for my children. And for me to have to be in, you know, in quote-unquote the system in this way was, you know, not a good experience for me.
Right.
I did not enjoy it. And,
right.
you know, it was not easy, and it was not at all fun. It did not feel good in the moment. It just felt necessary.
Right.
And that's really all I had.
So how did the judge react to you?
Well, I think he was surprised. I mean, of course, if you've ever been to family court, you see a lot of drama. And it was just, you know, you could just see the anger. And just sitting there, to be honest, just reaffirmed why I was there. Because I was like, I do not want to be in this world again. You know, just people fighting, and you can hear, you know, person sitting next to you, you know, talking about the man who showed up, who's across the hall, who's clearly the other parent. And it was just sad.
Yeah.
It was just sad, you know,
right.
And, you know, I mean, I've seen it when I sat through divorce court and then seeing again the family court. It just saddened me, and I just said, I don't want to be a part of this. And, you know, people holding on to their need to be right, and, you know, is it right that I am owed the money? Absolutely, you know, but sometimes you have to give up your need to be right for the greater good, and for that, which is my children, you know, I was going to do that. You know, there is no question that I deserve, my children deserved, I didn't deserve to have to work so hard. All of that is absolutely true. But it is also true that what was more important to me was giving up my need to be right and to prove a point and to get someone back for the sake of my children. And that, you know, sitting there, I was just reminded that this is what I want to do, because if this is what it takes for me never have to be here again, I will do it.
Right.
And so I went to the judge, and he was a little bit surprised.
Yeah,
you know,
I bet he was.
He wanted to make sure that I understood. He did explain to me options and, you know, wanted to make sure I understood. So that was that. And, of course, it was telling my family and my friends and, you know, my other single mom supporters who, you know, weren't exactly supportive of my decision and, you know, didn't feel like I should. You know, but, you know, the language is let him off the hook.
Right,
And I just thought, you know, there's no hook, you know? It's just weird.
Well, so what I'm hearing from you is a lot of the elements of forgiveness. When you say letting him off the hook, you know, I have another colleague that talks about forgiveness is about taking the hook out of your heart.
There you go.
Yeah, and also an obstacle to forgiveness is often the need to see that justice is done, and feeling like you are the one that has to enforce the justice, and what in you going to court and asking the judge to forgive this debt, it's about you forgiving, you relinquishing responsibility for enforcing justice. It's almost like giving up and saying, you know, he is going to somehow, he will, it's not my responsibility to hold him morally responsible for the financial support of his children.
Absolutely, and I feel strongly about that. And also that, you know, I find that the conversation is very much about him and him and him. And my conversation is about my children. I'm like, this has nothing to do with him, you know? He is the beneficiary of an act that I took on behalf of my children. I get that. But it was not about him. It was really about my children. And, you know, I think that if we can kind of shift our focus, you know, more about what's best for children and not what people may be, quote-unquote, getting away with, then, you know, maybe we can move things forward. I mean, there's nothing I would do for my children. And I'm sure any mother or father would say, there's nothing I wouldn't do for my children.
Right.
So how am I any different than any other mother who has said, there's nothing I wouldn't do for my children? Is it that when it comes to money, there is a limit? You know, so it was just weird. I was like, but we always say there's nothing I wouldn't do for my children. And that is absolutely true. There is nothing I would not do that I'm capable of doing for the sake of my children. So I didn't really see this as so revolutionary in the language of there's nothing we won't do for our children.
Right. So, but child
somehow
support
that changes
is
when it comes to money.
Yes. Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, child support is such an emotional issue, and you know, it, like, we've been so wrapped up, I've forgotten to remind our listeners that today I'm talking to Kimberly Sears Allard, who's a journalist and author of the Mocha Manuals. We're talking about child support. And Kimberly, in your piece, you also talked about your ex contributing in alternative currencies. And so I wanted just to touch on those and what you meant by those.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, there were other things that were of value to me. Yes, money is so important, but that money would have probably been used to pay a babysitter, you know, pay for things that the children need. And so if he could actually contribute directly to that, you know, it's just cutting out the middleman, you know. And so it turned out that because of these periods of unemployment, underemployment, he had more time and I was able to work and I needed to travel. And so, you know, he was able to have the children in ways that would have cost me, you know, expensive contributions in terms of childcare. You know, just certain things that need to be done. You know, whether it was taking time away from work to go to doctor's appointments or, you know, just things that need to be done. And so what was interesting to me was that, you know, I think that we see value outside of money in many other areas. You know, I think that if we think about our work, right, we would look at total compensation, not just in terms of our salary, but perhaps in terms of other kind of quote-unquote soft benefits, whether that's
right,
the ability to have flexible time, you know, I mean, other things that are important to us that we would consider part of our total compensation, but we haven't been able to rethink value in other terms, value as time. We will quickly say time is money. But we haven't been able to rethink the valuable things of contributions, the contributions fathers can make outside of a set dollar amount per month. And so, I feel strongly that we need to create alternate currencies. There's great value in fathers showing up at PTA meetings and, you know, reading to their children and spending time and baseball, you know, but there's this great value in time. And if we could try to create some sort of alternate currency that not just judges and values a father solely on his money, because to me, a father who pays his child support but never sees his child is a deadbeat.
Right, but just to be devil's advocate here, people would say that those other things like showing up at PTA meetings and being involved in child sports is parenting. That is just it's a core part of what parenting is about. It's a fundamental element. So why should that preclude you from meeting?
Well, here's the
coming
thing that
up
you're missing. When a parent has to work, right? And so many times these meetings or these things may be something that parents cannot attend because they have to work. So it is great, you know, now that I could go to every one of my son's games. But that was not always the case when I was on an hour and a half commute and I had to go to a job that ended at 6 and I had to come home. And so when people are working, there is value in a parent who can actually show up when the working parent cannot. Or you can look at the times that I had to try to sneak out of the office to try to get to something, you know, to support my child, to make an excuse so I could actually be home in time for the concert. You know, so I think that when we talk about parenting, we have to understand what that looks like for each parent, whether you're a working parent versus just a stay-at-home parent, and what the cost it is of parenting. So for many parents, to parent means that they're not working.
Right.
And
right.
So when the other parent can do the parenting, that doesn't mean that the child misses out on the experience, and also doesn't mean that the family misses out on the income.
But
there are lots of ways of looking at it.
And what you're talking about is an issue for married, for parents who are married and parents who are divorced.
Sure. it works both ways, you know, because this, you know, same way, time is money, and it takes money for a parent to show up. If a parent is showing up, either the other spouse earns enough for that parent to be home, or they have left their job, hopefully that they're not an hourly wage person, so that they have left their job and not missing the hours of getting paid, but it takes money to show up.
Right. And so, Kimberly, we're coming up to the end here, but I did just want to talk about this. I know in Colorado here there are ways for people, parents, to agree to have child support paid directly to each other, which means then it doesn't go through the child support system, so there wouldn't be necessarily the tracking of arrears, and maybe that would be more – that would provide more flexibility for these alternative currencies and credits or acknowledgements for contributions that are not hard dollars.
Oh, I agree. I mean, it was not my decision for my ex-husband to be in the system. It was his decision. And for whatever reason, he thought that would be better for him.
Right.
It did not. And in the end, you know, it was me who had to undo a situation that he wanted to be in. So I'm very clear about that. Again, very difficult 3 hours sitting on the bench. So yes, absolutely. I mean, I think that when families can work together and come up with, you know, creative ways that parenting can be shared and the cost of parenting can be shared, then it always works out better for children. Our system is not set up for us to do those things. And so staying out of the quote-unquote system in those ways offers the best hope for, you know, really valuing and creating real co-parenting, real contributions without this kind of, you know, anger and bitterness around the child support piece. And I just wanted to say, I know we're wrapping up, but, you know, one of the things I really wanted to make sure that mothers are often viewed as gatekeepers to children, and that, you know, what I mentioned, that the whole pay-per-view situation where fathers don't pay and they don't get to see their children, that breaks my heart. And I think the system creates a feeling that you are right to not allow access to the child because you haven't paid. Even though the court will review support limitations, two different things, the issue is being confused by mothers every day.
Right.
And, you know, having the system set that up and to actually punish, you know, kind of allows legitimacy to that feeling. And that's something else that needs to be addressed.
Oh, my gosh, Kimberly, we've only just scratched the surface of all this today. Do you have any recommendations for anyone who either owes back child support or who is owed back child support?
Oh, my goodness. You know, my only recommendation is to just look at it solely through what's most important to the child. You know, if you have a person who is unable to pay, you know, what can you do to, you know, increase his value to you in other ways? What else do you need if he can't give you money that he may be able to provide? Everyone may have access to something, if it's not even a granny who cooks meals. You know, what else does he have access to that you need? If someone is unwilling to pay child support, I believe that they should be punished and the law should do what the law is set up to do for those who are unwilling to pay. That's unacceptable. But if you do have someone who's unable, please focus on the child, see what can be done to just make sure that child has a father. The studies about how children fare so much better when there is father involvement are just, you know, off the charts and, you know, irrefutable at this point. If you have arrears, you know, I think a lot of fathers stay away because they've been told that their value is money. And so many fathers never come up, you know, may feel like they are pushed away because they don't feel they are worthy, quote-unquote, because they don't have the money. So if you do have arrears, I would certainly implore anyone to try to have conversations about the value they can bring outside of money. And perhaps come up with a workable strategy to reduce the arrears and what else could be used to credit that.
Right.
It's difficult. And I also just need to close by saying that I wrote about what worked for me, and I don't want anyone to think that what I did, I think other people can do. This is my personal decision that I made for my family and my children, and everybody has to look at their own children and their own family and try to decide what's truly best for their child.
Right. And I would stress the importance of for people to pay attention to child support. They really have to make sure that they understand how child support works in their jurisdiction, how it's calculated, when it can be adjusted, and then when your circumstances change, don't put off filing for a modification. You've got to jump on that, because I had a mediation case where a dad had been unemployed for a year, and he had almost like some child support arrears in the mid 35,000 area. And when that came to us, we were negotiating child support going forward, but he asked for us to try and negotiate the arrears. The child support services said the arrears were subject to a court order. It was entirely up to the other party as to whether they even wanted to negotiate on that. And that just, you know, reinforces that if your circumstances change, you have to pay attention. I know it's kind of intimidating going into that court environment and the legal system, but you've got to get help, because otherwise you are going to end up in these arrears and with negative consequences. Kimberly, yeah. I love your perspective about separating parenting time from the financial piece. And I think that that's something here in Colorado the courts do try to emphasize to people, that parenting time, the amount of it, is not proportional to financial contribution at all. And I think that that's a really important message for our listeners to take away. I want to thank you, Kimberly, for sharing your story. I appreciate it. It's your own personal situation, but I think that your story will help bring a perspective to some of our listeners, and I love the element about forgiveness in there. Thank you for listening to Conversations About Divorce, and I hope you'll join us again next time. I'm Mandy Walker.